those of you who were here yesterday, you learned these clickers.
Yeah, they don't work on my TV.
You can't take them with you.
Don't watch anything other than what we've got on the screen here. But if you weren't here yesterday, there'll be a couple of times during the class that we ask you a question, and you'll simply respond by choosing the most appropriate answer with a 1, 2, 3, or 4.
I haven't looked at it, but I'm pretty sure they don't have a fast-forward button on them or anything like that.
Or so, mute.
Yeah, or mute, yeah.
For you, they don't have a mute.
Sorry. Can't use that feature.
We're just going to say a quick word of introduction for the benefit. I see a couple of new faces. We mentioned and showed this picture yesterday that Jason and I are lifelong friends. He's still the one on the right, just like we're standing here today.
We fall into these patterns.
And
some cotton candy right about now, though.
Yeah, some cotton candy would be good. One thing I didn't observe about this picture yesterday that we've talked about before is how we appear to be from two different seasons, which is interesting. I'm in a long sleeve and jeans. And
I've always been casual.
Always been casual. But I am at Lipscomb University. I've been there for 13 years. Spent most of that time as a therapist in the University Counseling Center. But more recently, I have moved into a faculty role in our graduate marriage and family therapy program. I'm married, and we have a 19th anniversary coming up, and I have a 13-year-old daughter and a son that's turning 10 this month.
My name is Jason Allison. I'm the preaching minister of the Pegram Church of Christ. It's just west of Nashville. June 1st of this year, I've been there 20 years, having served as youth in worship, custodian, pretty much anything they needed over the past 20 years. A great place, great people. I'm married to Amy. We have 5 children. Bailey, Brett, I wrote them down. Bailey, Brett, Sydney, Blake, and Blake. You heard that story, why we have a big Blake and a little Blake. We are a blended family. We prefer the term chunky. We are still working on blended. That's the goal. But we are 5 years into that again this June. And so we are much more blended today than we were then. But part of that our story today, of course, has to do with the story from my past. And that is my first wife, Yvette, passed away in January of 2008, as I shared with you yesterday. To this day, there is still no known cause. She passed away in her sleep. She was 33 years old. She was perfectly healthy. We had, at that time, 8-year-old, 5-year-old, and 18-month-old together. And it left us reeling. And not just us, for our immediate family, the community in which she grew up, the church in which she grew up, that is also the church where I minister, and really left us searching and for a lot of answers. And even to this day, somewhat still trying to, and I'll talk about this a little bit, when I hear and learn of another's grief experience or loss, it causes me to revisit that and to kind of examine those details. And I always come to that point of wishing there were an answer and an explanation medically, and the entitlement, that enters in of needing and wanting that answer. But also with that, as we'll discover today, the greater opportunity that it has given me to minister and to speak with others and share with others that might not feel comfortable otherwise.
So we asked this question yesterday, but we want to see if we have a different makeup today. And as I said yesterday, probably more than one of these applies. Just choose the one that most closely applies why you're here. Take a moment to read through those and select 1, 2, 3, or 4. And you just hit the number and it'll record it. Just get to vote for one. You can't. If you hit 2, it's just going to choose one of them. So,
she's wanting to select the passing time till Randy hears.
Right, I know. So let's see what we have. Okay. Great. And I do want to say that while these are important distinctions on one level, on another level, they may be somewhat false distinctions, because it may be that you're currently experiencing grief, but at some point, as a result of walking through that, you will also be ministering to those who are grieving. You know, Paul talks about us giving comfort, the comfort that we have received, in turn giving that to others, which is true ministry. But we are going to focus today on ministering to those who are going through loss.
And there you have some examples we shared yesterday. We're not going to go back through those, but just as a reminder to you, because this will connect with a question that we'll be asking you a little later in speaking about your ability and your comfort level, I guess, in ministering and speaking with others and walking with them through their grief. One thing I'll mention about this, and then we'll go back and revisit, another question, is that I did mention yesterday, is avoid the temptation to compare your loss with another. Mm. That's dangerous territory. And we'll talk some about the language in which we use in talking with others. But even internally, be careful about doing that. I face that temptation very often early on and continue to. It services, even speaking with Tim here and talking, I try to engage and to learn more about situations just for my own benefit and to understand more of their situation. But that's fine. But be careful about then looking at your own grief and using that as some type of comparison as to how you should feel, how they should feel, where you should be in your grief, where they should be, making that judgment, those type things.
Great. This is not a question that for today. We just wanted to put it in here as a reminder. We asked this at the end of time, not the end of time, the end of our time.
Where'd you get that information?
Well, I know something that some of you don't know, but
something to make sure we both think we're really funny,
right?
Okay, now we do. Now my wife, don't ask her. So it's kind of odd when we teach this class, but okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
We asked this question: time heals all wounds, and. What we said about that was that time in and of itself may not be a healing agent. However, it allows space. We talked about that being still and waiting, and that idea from the Psalms and from Isaiah, that time allows space for healing to occur and for God's redemptive work to be done. And this is a very encouraging idea from the Psalms, that God is the one who heals, that we don't have to manipulate our way to healing. We don't have to distract ourselves, that God heals, but that happens over time.
When you think about those responses yesterday, rewind and fast forward and eject and did I forget one? Rewind. Oh, pause. The final one. Yeah, pause. Then with obviously with the pause response, time is essential to that. Just some notes that I had about that particular phrase: time doesn't heal, but God heals over time. God uses time to help us heal if we use it wisely. That grief, in my experience and in opinion, doesn't ever go away. I mean, it never goes away. And sometimes folks will even say, well, it gets easier with time. I'm not sure easier is the best way to phrase that either. It can certainly get better with time. And that's probably a more accurate way to say that. One of the important things to do is to find a language that works for you. And this in regards especially with my kids. When there were times that either that emotionally they didn't want to talk about, you know, what they were feeling, or they just really couldn't quite vocalize it. So we found a metaphor or whatever might work to really help us communicate that. And there's no more fitting place to share this metaphor than here at the coast about waves. Even Pepperdine is the Pepperdine waves. But and you may have heard this before, but when you experience grief, it can come at you at waves. And if you were to go right now down to the coast and stand there, you know, you kind of know that there's different size waves that come. Some are big and can knock you off your feet. Mm-hmm. They have the power to do that. But sometimes you can stand and you can withstand that wave. You stand, plant your feet, and it hits you, but it doesn't knock you down, and you can resist it. But then there's other times, and it can even be a smaller wave, that when you allow yourself to kind of let go, that it can kind of take you where it wants to take you, and it brings you back. You know, that idea of a wave, I think, is a very powerful analogy when thinking about allowing God to heal us over time. Using that type metaphor, especially with children, can be helpful because they understand, you know, that experience with the wave experience. But certainly, time gives us opportunity to heal. And with that, this next part we want to talk about is opportunity to grow.
Absolutely. In 2012, a publication called Christian Counseling Today published an article where the authors were pointing to scientific research, empirical research, that found some very tangible benefits of going through difficult experience. And these authors referred to this as post-traumatic growth. The original work was done in a Journal of Psychological Inquiry, but these authors found five things, and I'm always fascinated when science demonstrates something that God has already said, and I think that's the case with these five. These are outcomes or eventual benefits over time of going through a difficult experience. Number one, an increased appreciation of life in general, and a sense of what is really important.
And yesterday we spoke about it causes you to really examine who and what you're living for. Because if that person or that thing that you are living for in this life can be taken away from you, then there goes your reason for living. And so it causes you, challenges you to seek a higher purpose, you know, in your life, and certainly for the Christian, our focus and our primary love to be for God, something that cannot be taken from us, so that, again, I think that's what, in this post-traumatic growth, it causes you to examine those things.
The second thing that these authors found was that going through difficult experiences leads you to closer and more meaningful relationships.
You find yourself with access to a network that maybe you didn't know existed in your life.
Yeah.
Because you hadn't needed it, perhaps, or at least you hadn't sought to access it. And God puts people in your life at just the right time. And sometimes it can come from the most oddest, you know, most odd of places and faces that God will use in your life. But that can be a very powerful help as well.
It can, and it can also deepen relationships that you already are very well aware of, pre-existing relationships. As you saw, Jason and I have been friends since, really, I don't remember us not knowing each other. So we've been friends for as long as we can recall. But going through the loss of Yvette in 2008 still changed our relationship. It changed some of the rules of the friendship. And one example of that is I've never been really a chatty telephone guy. You know, I don't really call people up just to talk. Les and Leslie Parrott talk about the difference in rapport talk and report talk, that some of us engage in rapport talk just to build relationship. Others of us just are giving a report, making plans. And up to 2008, when I would call Jason, when he would call me, it was to make a plan. You want to go to this concert? You want to go to this ball game? You know, something that the kids are doing, or whatever it might be. And I can remember every day for a long time after Yvette passed away, feeling compelled to call, but having nothing to talk about. Just calling to see how the day is, how you're doing. That required a shift in how the friendship had worked up to that point. Closer, more meaningful relationship.
Before you move from that one, too, in regards to marriage, because Amy and I married in 2009, a year and a half later, we'd known each other. We had met at basically about the same time, certainly the same place at church camp where Yvette and I had met. So we'd known each other for all about the same time. Amy was coming out of a divorce 2 years prior. And, of course, having been married 10 years. Yvette and I had been married 10 years. This may sound odd, but we, you know, the depth of our marriage, where we began in our marriage, was at a much different level, you know, than, of course, where I had began in my first and she in her first. And so there are some things that we don't fight about. There are some things that just roll right off of us because there's a different depth to our relationship. You know, we're, you know, on record, we're 5 years into our marriage, but really we're 15 years or more into the act of marriage. And so, again, there's a depth to that, I think, as well that's coming.
Great. A third benefit, a general sense of greater personal strength.
Yvette and I never, I don't remember us having the conversation about losing one another. Our conversation centered around what if we ever lost one of the kids and how would we deal with that. And so we didn't have that conversation of could we do that. Those are conversations that Amy and I, again, starting at a different level, we have those conversations, we put things into place. So if that ever happens, you know, that there are some things in place to make it easier on the other. And those are, again, it gives you a sense of strength that you didn't have before. You learn, you grow, you know, through that difficult experience.
I can survive this.
Yes.
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 Four, an identification of new possibilities for life.
I've just got in my notes, some things that used to scare you don't scare you anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you faced what you thought you never would have to, what you had hoped and prayed you never have to, when you felt that kind of fear, that kind of weight, then other things that used to worry you don't worry you quite the same anymore.
And then the fifth finding, and again, these are objective authors doing an empirical study, as far as we know, with no particular religious agenda in doing their work. And after they study these people who've gone through traumatic experience, difficult experience, loss, grief, they say spiritual growth. We see spiritual growth in people who go through difficulty.
And I've heard it said, and I've preached it myself, that God is truly all you need, but sometimes you really don't feel that until God is all you really have, you know, in that moment of rock bottom. And it causes you to look seriously in your spiritual mirror about the substance of your faith and to go deeper than you've ever went before, to be more desperate than you've ever been before. And it changes the standard that you have of your own spiritual walk and growth.
So we've heard a lot about how grief is experienced individually and even the hidden benefits of that. But what about how we can respond, how we can help others? For me to help others, I must remember that at the heart of comfort is empathy. And empathy is what I really want to stress for all of us today. I don't think of empathy as something that requires that we've had the exact same experience. I don't have to have had the exact difficult experience you've had in order to act in an empathetic way toward you. But what I do have to do is account for the fact that your experience is difficult, even if it's different than my experience. Another way of trying to say that is, empathy is the capacity to accurately see the world as others see it. So when someone in my life goes through a difficult time, can I come to some degree of understanding that allows me to see what that person is seeing? Not to say I totally understand, because I can't, but that I'm making an effort to have a fuller understanding. I care enough to make that effort. To me, that's a great act of empathy. And this is something that's at the core of the gospel, John 3:16. Hebrews 4:15, we have a high priest who is able to understand our experiences. Matthew 5:41, the idea of walking the second mile when you're asked to be a service, not just 1 mile, go with them too. There's a big difference in walking a second mile with a hurting person out of empathy as opposed to out of guilt or out of a sense of duty or this is something that I should do. So think about Jesus in washing the disciples' feet. And what he says to them is, now that you have seen what I call you to do, now that you've seen that I call you to service to others, now that you know, do. Now that you know, do. So empathy requires some form of follow-up, some sort of action. Now that you know, now that you have some sense of understanding, do. But sometimes we don't do. And I don't think that's because we're bad people. Mm-mm. I think there's some very legitimate reasons for why we don't always respond to people who are going through difficult times. Jason mentioned earlier these four types of losses, and they may all be difficult, but with which type of loss do you think it is most difficult to help others? Is it most difficult to help others who've lost health, lost dreams or desires, possessions, or life, a loved one?
For them, which is most difficult
for
them?
Personally.
For you personally.
What is the most difficult type of loss to respond to? Okay. So it looks like when someone loses a loved one, when someone passes from this world, that's especially challenging for the group. Let me ask you a follow-up question then. And again, 1, 2, 3, or 4. When you know someone is hurting, and assuming that you're hesitant to do something, you're hesitant to approach them, you're hesitant to take some sort of action, what keeps you from doing that? What might keep you from approaching a grieving person? Is it that I feel like we lack a pre-existing relationship? Is it I feel like I don't know enough about the situation? Am I afraid I'm going to remind him that this difficult thing has happened if I bring it up? Or am I afraid I'm just going to say the wrong thing?
But everybody's wanting a 5, all the above at this point.
That's exactly why I didn't put a 5.
Yeah.
All of the above. But let's see what our most common obstacle is.
Okay.
That's interesting. So that says something about the need to be in relationship with people prior to difficulty. But it looks like all of these, there's somebody in here that's struggling with each of these things.
And before you, yeah. I know you mentioned a story on this, but just know, and some of you have experienced this already, that although one of your fears or obstacles is a lack of relationship, as we talked about, you may be that person that God is sending to this person, and your relationship may be formed out of this. You know, the depth may increase. Joe?
Yeah, I didn't have a category of response to it because I find myself responding in spite of myself. I'm a volunteer chaplain in different areas. And so just by doing what you're talking about, that empathy comes.
Yes.
And then it just doesn't stop.
And it turns out that none of these derail a sincere attempt to respond in an empathetic way. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah,
appreciate
none of the above.
Yeah, that could be. How many buttons are on those clickers?
Yeah. Right.
Stop.
Well, One thing I want to say to this, too, before we move on is 2 and 3 can sometimes be similar. I don't know exactly what's happened, so I'm not sure if I want to bring it up. Or I don't want to remind the person of the loss. And when we say it out loud, it almost sounds silly. But it is a very real concern. And I think you would probably say to that, hey, I'm already well aware of the fact that I have gone through this loss. You're not going to remind me. Maybe even I appreciate knowing that other people are remembering too. Yeah. And in terms of saying the wrong thing, we are going to actually get to some things to say or not to say. When I was a kid growing up, my parents put me in Red Cross swim lessons. And if you've gone through that program, you know that it's a progressive sort of program where each year it gets more challenging and skills are added. You start out just kind of learning to swim and learning the basic strokes. And as you get older, if you stay in the program summer to summer, they start to add in life-saving skills so that once you're old enough at the end of the program, you can be certified as a lifeguard. And I have a very clear recollection of being a young guy standing outside a pool, watching the instructor teach us how to pull in a drowning person who's close enough to the edge that you can use a pole rather than getting in the water yourself. And if you're not familiar with that, you may have noticed on the sides of swimming pools, on the fences, these long poles. That's what that's there for, because if you can stay out of the water, it's always better to stay out of the water if you can save someone without putting yourself in danger. And there's a way to do it in terms of how to stand and how to balance your weight so that you don't end up getting pulled in. And I can remember the instructor demonstrating all of that. And the reason I watched so closely is I knew how this worked. He would demonstrate, and then we would get in the line, and each of us would do it, and everybody else would watch. And I had some anxiety about that, so I wanted to do it right. So I watched the stance and how you position that pole and how you feed that out there to the person and bring it in. And one of the things I observed was that the lifesaver, the lifeguard, talked to the drowning person. There was someone in the pool that was pretending to drown, someone else demonstrating how to save. And he would talk in an effort to, as funny as it sounds, get the person's mind off the fact that he's drowning. Okay? So that he stops panicking and allows you to pull him in. And you've got to remember the time period here. This would have been in the 1970s. And so part of the small talk that he's making with this guy is he brings up movies. And he says, hey, have you seen Star Wars? And he begins to talk to him about Star Wars as he pulls him into safety. So I cataloged that. Okay. Talk to them about, you know, safe kinds of topics, things that would help get their mind off the fact that they're drowning. And when it became my turn, I got my stance right, got my position right, had the pole extended, trying to get the person to grab on so I could pull them in, and I thought, I'm forgetting something, what am I supposed to do? Oh, I'm supposed to talk. What am I supposed to talk about? Movies. And I panicked, and I promise you, this is a true story. I said to a drowning person, so, have you seen Jaws? That really happened. That was a very embarrassing moment for me. And it was an early experience with saying the wrong thing, right? I can remember, too, to add to the embarrassment, the guy pretended to panic and he drowned. I was the only kid that actually lost my pretend drowner there. So that's a very real fear there. We do panic sometimes and we get anxious and we're afraid that whatever we say is going to be the wrong thing. And so many years later, I was at a conference in Orlando, Florida with the American Association for Christian Counselors. listening to a woman named Melissa Slagle, who is a helper to the helpers. She trains nurses and counselors and ministers and people in helping professions to deal with crisis. And she addressed this issue of when you don't know what to say. And she said, you know what? When you don't know what to say, you can just say, I'm sorry. And my initial reaction to that was, you know, I paid a lot of money to come to this conference and traveled all the way. It was Orlando, Florida. It wasn't a, you know, a hardship, but traveled all the way to Florida from Nashville, and this is really what you're bringing to equip us, is just say, I'm sorry. I mean, isn't there something a little more? And then at some point, I realized, when you thought about the kinds of people in the room, all professionals, professional helpers, all people who probably felt a great internal pressure to have something perfect or especially wise to say. And what she was doing was giving us permission that we didn't have to prove our intelligence or demonstrate our education or any of that, that we just had to be present. We didn't have to fix things with our words, and I think that takes a lot of pressure off of this issue.
And something else to add to that with about, you know, the concern about saying the wrong thing, it puts you in a difficult position sometimes when they do. As someone who is grieving about how you're going to respond back to them, I shared a few examples yesterday, but there's a certain amount of pressure that we can place on ourselves to make others feel better in their attempt to make us feel better. Does that make any sense? And with one of the things that the counselor told me early on was how to respond to others when they say, how are you doing? And you walk out here into the Commons, the Plaza area, and someone says, how are you doing? Well, it depends on the relationship probably that you have with that person as to how you might answer that. Fine is our okay, you know, or pretty acceptable answers, but what exactly are they asking? Well, to a grieving person, to say, how are you doing? He offered this response, which worked wonderfully for me, to say, well, I have my good days and I have my bad days. Because then the ball's kind of in their court to go, oh, well, and then it could be, well, I'll be praying for you. Or, and very sincere. But for those that wanted to go further, could say, well, tell me about the bad days. And then you had someone who was more invested and wanted to know more. That was very helpful for me in a very kind and respectful way to give an accurate statement to my condition, but also not unload on that person who really wasn't asking for that much information or maybe didn't have the time or maybe they weren't willing to make that kind of investment. With a lot of things that are said, they can be very true statements, but maybe not appropriate. I experienced that on this morning coming in. Before we were headed here, it was a meeting day for breakfast, and I was trying to text him that it was nice to have a man on the ground because he was checking out breakfast for us to see if it was still open. What the autocorrect said is it was nice to have mammogram. So, obviously, that's a true statement.
That's a good thing to have.
True statement.
Yeah.
But not appropriate, okay, between two guys and for me, no matter what the relationship there. So, these things that I share with you are, for the most part, true statements, but maybe they're not the most appropriate at the time. My wife's really nervous that I shared that story. Okay. Sometimes folks have lazy scripture. We talked about Romans 8:28 being tossed around the way that it has been. And I'm not going to be critical of that, but what I know is allow folks to find the scripture on their own. You know, folks try to explain it and to prove it to you and why this was, you know, God's will and that time. It's much better if we find it on our own. For me, it was in a card that someone wrote to me, and they just put the passage of Isaiah 57:1-2. Good people pass away. The godly often die before their time. No one seems to understand that God is protecting them from the evil to come. For those who follow godly paths will rest in peace when they die. Well, you can think about how that would speak to my condition, my situation. But I needed to find that on my own. I didn't need it forced upon me. And maybe you've had similar experiences. Here are some things, and I don't mean these to be critical. I find myself tempted by this as well. Yes?
When I lost my husband,
do see each other until probably 4 months after he lost his wife.
Uh-huh.
And then when we saw each other, he walked up. I didn't even see him. He saw me first.
Mm-hmm.
He walked up to me. He put his arms around me. He did not say one word.
Mm-hmm.
It was the most comforting thing that I had experienced. That I had.
Yeah.
That's the entire grief process.
The presence.
The presence.
Yeah.
The presence.
Yeah.
Just the love.
Yes.
You're exactly right.
Yes.
Let me share some of these, and then I actually come back to exactly what you've shared, I think, that folks would say, well, God needed her more. Well, think about it. I'm looking at three kids right here without a mother. That's not really what I needed to hear at that moment. God needed another flower in his garden. My mind was thinking, God can make a whole new garden if he wants to, you know? God needed another angel. Again, I was like, she was an angel here on earth. You know, we needed her here too. I know just how you feel. I avoid that. I would never tell anyone that now. No matter how similar the circumstances might be, there is no way that I can truly know exactly how you feel. More appropriately is, I can never begin to know exactly how you feel. That's a much more appropriate way to say that.
And I think you've shared with me, you say that now to people who know your story.
Oh, sure.
And
sure.
They say, but yours was
they'll
so
offer to
difficult.
Me. Folks will say, oh, but you know how I feel. And I go, no, I don't. You know, I know how I felt, and I'm willing to share it. Yeah. But I'm not going to pretend to know how you feel, as if mine's any worse than yours, as if mine was more painful than yours. That's wrong. I mean, that's rude of me to even assume. Couple of things. These are especially, I got very protective with the kids when people would say these things, and they meant well.
Absolutely.
And I knew it.
Yeah, well-meaning.
But would say to me or the kids, you're holding up so well. That sounds like a good thing, doesn't it? You're being so strong and so brave. Well, what I found that did, it put extra pressure. They weren't intending to do that, but then it put pressure, especially on the kids, to keep a good face, as if, you know, they couldn't break down, or that we couldn't be a mess when we really were a mess, especially on the inside. And so it wasn't healthy for us. And again, people weren't asking that of us. But to think that through now, it can be very unhealthy to have that type of additional pressure. Zig Ziglar in the Grief Share series that some of you shared that have been very helpful for you, he says it's not a time, grief is not a time to be strong or brave. It's a time to be human. And that's exactly what our experience was. A couple more. When people say, well, it's a blessing, or it was God's will. Well, unless God has given you some profound insight that he was holding back from me, you know, it was difficult for me at the time to accept how this was a blessing. I could see and I could imagine at times how God was going to bless us. And I, you know, that wasn't denying that. But God was blessing us as well when she was here. And to say it was God's will, that's for us to determine again, to find that on our own and to be prayerful about that. Here's the last one I want to share. If there's anything I can do at all, call. Well, let me tell you, for the most part, they won't. They won't call. They're not going to call you. They don't want to burden you. They don't want to, you know, they know you're busy. They know that you have your own things going on. They won't call. Instead, find ways, be very creative in ways that you can communicate to them what your heart is telling you, but do it in a way that allows them to receive it as they want to receive it, to act upon it when they want to act upon it. And if that's just dropping them things in the mail, I've never received a card and thought, well, this was just a totally wrong time to get an encouraging card in the mail. And I know in the world of technology with text and email and all those things, but I'll tell you, with all those bills and all those things that come in the mail, I still enjoy getting a good old-fashioned card and having that. And that's why we have buckets and buckets and boxes of those things that we keep. But back to your story quickly, I think experience that I had was with someone I served with. Actually, he brought me here to Pepperdine, I think, for one of the first times, Scotty Harris. He was preaching at another church at this point, but I was waiting for him to get to me. This was the Sunday. It happened on a Saturday morning, and he was driving up some 6 hours away to be with me that Sunday night, and I was just waiting for all the things that all the people had said, most of which I couldn't even hear. I just so desperately wanted to know what Scotty, who I respected so much, had to say about all this. And I remember when he pulled into the driveway, I was waiting. I went out to the sidewalk to meet him, and what happened was he just embraced me, and what he said to me in all his profound wisdom is, there are no words. And I found myself using that many times now in my some of my very first response with individuals who have had a tragic, sudden loss, is there are no words. You know, and not to try to pretend that I have the ability in any way to fix this for them. But I do have the ability to be present, and that's so much of what we said.
Yeah, I think a good litmus test, if I'm considering whether or not to say something, one good test is to ask myself the question, what I'm about to say, is that really about meeting this person's need? Or is it somehow about meeting my own need? My own need to be uncomfortable, or to be more comfortable. My own need to avoid awkwardness. My own need to explain why God would do this. Or is it truly about meeting the need of the person that's standing here in front of me? We got about 5 minutes.
If you want to do this.
Yeah, quickly. Yes.
No. You were a pastor at this time, correct? Or a minister? Mm-hmm. And my situation, I'm not a minister or anything, but we're part of the popular people. Okay, mm-hmm. We have lots of friends and everything. And my wife, her dad passed away, her sister passed away, and now she's had gone through the 3 cancer surgeries within this. And it amazes me how many people have responded this at our congregation. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, I didn't know we touched that many people. In one sense, I never knew we had touched that because there's people from the congregation mm-hmm. that are coming over and just visiting her. Mm-hmm. And, wow, Drew visited you. Wow, I never, you know, I talked to Drew, but never knew we affected them enough that they could come. Mm-hmm. And wife and I were talking about this, and we were saying, this is a true blessing that we're having because of all the congregations just showing their love, the prayers, and everything else. Mm-hmm. How do people do this alone?
How many times have we had this conversation?
Many don't.
It's difficult to go through this process because I am watching my wife, and she's going through a lot of pain, a lot of stress. But it's so much simpler because of the support of the people you're talking about. And whether they do it right or wrong, I don't even care. I just, wow.
You're thankful.
Somebody's coming over and saying hello. Somebody's calling the letters. We have the letters up on those stupid little
Yeah.
And how do we, maybe it's not the minister or the guy who's always up front or the guy who's always in the center of action or the lady who's always in there. It's the guy in the corner.
Right. Oh, sure.
That we don't know. Mm-hmm. That's the one that's the one I think I'm more concerned about. Mm-hmm. Our family's got plenty of attention.
Right. You start being concerned about others that might be overlooked.
Right.
Yeah. I understand that.
And not just the one who's suffering. Mm-hmm. And they don't raise their hand. I need prayers. Mm-hmm. They don't, and you don't even know it.
Right. There's something to making yourself available too. You know, in that moment too, and realize that allowing this is true not just in the grief experience, but allowing others to help you helps them. You know, and you experience that, and it's kind of like you go through those seasons. It's not always going to be equal time, you know, that's given. But I think we go through those seasons. But you're right, identifying those within the midst of community and the body of Christ is important for everyone.
Well, and I think you probably would have mentioned this at some point anyway, but a program like a Grief Share, and Jason has led Grief Share at Pegram, that's a program that can really capture people that people may be drawn to that they're not as visible, and therefore organically, just naturally, they don't get as much attention. But if they can find their way to a Grief Share, if they can be identified and asked in, you've got this community that develops through a program like that, which is
I don't know if you wanted to say anything more about grief share, but I know we did.
Well, that's true, but like a lot of things, it's not necessarily for everyone. I think everyone should try it. Everyone, sometimes you get into it, and what we find is it's too soon for some folks.
Yeah.
And so they, you know, but just because it's, you know, the timing is important, that type thing, but it doesn't have to be that particular, but that seems, and I've shared that with others, that seems to be the best that's out there right now, the most trusted, most healthy for churches, and to identify folks and, you know, to offer something, again, that's kind of universally effective. Yeah.
Okay.
But a couple things at the end, but I'll just, one thing is we had this fire safe, you know, that you put things in that you don't want to, you know, if there were a fire, that type thing, that would have been a loss of property, possessions, that my wife wanted to put pictures and things like that in. Well, one of the things I discovered just over time after she had passed is that I didn't know the combination to this safe. And so I carried and lugged this safe around even from one house to our new house and everything. I still had this safe with no idea of what was inside of it and with no idea of how I was looking at the name of the company online trying to find it. One day, going through a box of stuff that took me forever to go through those things, I'd do a little bit at a time, and then if I'd get too emotional, I'd put it away for that day, come back to it again. I found the paper that had the combination. Can you imagine the feeling, the excitement that I had? As I went, you know, trembling to the safe, and was able to open it up, and inside I found the combination to the safe. That's all that was in there. She had never gotten around to putting the pictures in, anything in this safe. And it just, I mean, I just laughed and laughed.
Which is a great story about her.
Her, yeah, that's right. She had every intention, you know, of doing that, but instead she locked the other copy of the combination up inside of the safe. You know, it made everything came out. But I say that to say, you know, you go through this process. What I think that we want you to take away from this, and there's so much more that we would love to have shared and heard from you, whether individually or collectively in community, I believe that God has the answers placed within us. I think what grief does is it gives us the opportunity to grow. It gives God the opportunity to draw those answers, to unlock those answers that he has placed within us, and discover things we may not have ever discovered about ourselves, about the nature of God on our own without that experience. And so it takes time, but allow God to use others in your life to help you unlock those things that he has perhaps hidden away in your heart. And he will do that.
Let me pray for you, and we'll be finished. Father God, thank you for being here. We know you're here just as real as each person sitting at this table, that you're sitting among us. And you know so much more about this than any of us, about what it is to go through loss and to love deeply in spite of loss. And so, Father, we pray for your Spirit, that when we don't know what to do, we don't know what to say, but something needs to be done, something needs to be said, that your Spirit would move. And we pray that we would be open to that movement as we deal with our own losses and as we try to help others with theirs. It's through Jesus that we pray. Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your comments.
Yes.